Hi, this is Alex Steinmetz of Busky Cider in Richmond, Virginia, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
And this is episode 23. Hello and welcome to a Cider Chat. This is Rhea Wincoller, your Cider MC. And on this weekly podcast, we chat with cider makers, cider enthusiasts, and people within the cider trade who do all the behind-scenes things to get a good glass of cider out to you and I. So cheers to everyone, and thank you for listening to this podcast. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Alex Steinmetz of Busky Cider in Richmond, Virginia. And it's going to be about the start of a cidery there. They've just pitched the yeast, and I thought it would be a good idea to find out what are some of the behind-the-scene lists and checkoffs that one must do in order to get an urban cidery started. More on that chat in a moment. I first want to say thank you to all of you who subscribed to the Cider e-newsletter via the ciderchat.com website. I have to admit, I haven't gone into that. I haven't gotten notifications. I'm not sure why. And so I just happened to look over the weekend, and wouldn't you know it, there is a village of people in Ciderville. So thank you to all of you who took the time to subscribe. That means a lot to me. And as I start getting my cider bottles in a row, there will be e-news going out to each of you. If you'd like to subscribe, just simply go to the website, again, ciderchat.com, and you'll see the little logo that is the Cider Chat logo, and it says Cider e-news. Really, really easy. Or you could just send me an email, and I'll put you on the list too. But wow, what a nice feeling to look in and see so many smiling faces looking back and saying, yeah, I'd like to get some news there. Pretty cool, right? And that also leads me to the Facebook page. Some folks joined there too, so I just want to thank them. That's Michael, Lepot, Tyler, Dave, Brandon, and Leilani. Thank you for taking the time to join in the conversation that we have there. And I often post items that are a little bit different from other cider pages, at least I think so. Sometimes they're redundant. One is that I always post there first the episodes that are going out. And then when I find some pretty interesting cider-centric news that's a little bit off the beaten trail, I'll be posting that too. So there's a nice little conversation that happens. And of course, there is Twitter, and you could find me at CiderChat on Twitter. Lots of great conversations happening. Most recently, there was a Periscope that took place in Antwerp in Belgium, and that was kind of neat. It was from Aspal, and Aspal was periscoping this event, and I asked them, how many ciders are there? And it looked like a really cool. I saw lots of distilled spirits. There was a guy like shaking a cocktail, and the person on Periscope was just walking around, and I really enjoyed it. It was a nice clip, and they said that they were the only cider present in this huge, huge convention. So bravo for Aspal for doing that. And Periscope, you could follow them at Aspal. And you could also follow Cider Chat on Periscope at Cider Chat. So via Twitter, there is a conversation that's always happening. And there were some really nice shout-outs this past week. And one that really wet my whistle was from Andrew Graybill. That's Andrew. His Twitter feed is at Woodland Cider, and he wrote, at Cider Chat, listen to your interviews with I Am Cider, that's Bill Bradshaw, and at Millstone Cellar, that was Kurt Shearer's episode. So informative, fantastic cider. And that was just so sweet for that person, Andrew, to take the time to tweet that out into the world. So thank you. That keeps me moving forward. Which leads me to the big topic this week on how to continue to move the Cider Chat forward and really keep this podcast thriving. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor, you certainly can. And we have a wonderful sponsor. That's CiderSellers.com. They import UK ciders. And we need more. And one way to do that and to make it really simple for every listener of Cider Chat is to join in and become a patron of Cider Chat. So I started a Patreon page just this week, and you can now watch a YouTube clip. I had a lot of fun doing that. You know, it's interesting when the podcaster goes on and tries to create a video. I try to keep it really simple, explain what Patreon is, and it's very simple model indeed. Essentially, I get to continue to produce this podcast, and you in turn give money to help with that production, because there's so much involved and it's a very time consuming process. And of course, it also costs money to produce it too. Just as my great uncle used to say, no money, no funny, and no whiskey, and no beer. Yeah. And that's kind of how it goes out in the world, doesn't it? I mean, if there wasn't this podcast, you'd just be hearing. I prefer to chat with you about cider. The cool thing about Patreon is you get to set the limit of how much you'd like to be a patronage for this chat. And I've offered some cider appetizers, or what they like to call rewards. So take a look at that. Go to Patreon, and that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And just Google my name, Rhea Windcaller, or Cider Chat, and it'll come up. You could also find it on the CiderChat.com website, too. Now let's head to Virginia. So we could be speaking with Alex Steinmetz of Busky Cider. The cool thing about Virginia, it's a coastal state. It's on the east coast of the United States. It's just south of Washington, D.C. And right outside of D.C. is the city of Alexandria. My home port. I mean, not really my home port. My full name is Alexandria, FYI. That's like a little Cider Chat trivia question. My nickname is Rhea. So I have this like colossal long name, but my parents gave me my nickname really early on. When I'm wearing my princess dress, you could call me Alexandria. Anywho, so it's a really beautiful location, and the city of Richmond, of course, is not right along the border there. It's a little further south on Interstate 95, and it's inland. It's not really on the coast. It's kind of a jagged coast there with lots of bays going in. So imagine Virginia Beach is to the east, and it's kind of like right in the middle of the upper northern part of Virginia. Lots of things happening there for cider. There is the Virginia Association of Cider Makers. There is also the Virginia Cider Week and a Cider Trail. And that Cider Week happens in November. So we'll be talking about that as we do get closer to November. Lots of cool happenings. It's a great time to be a cider maker in Virginia. And these guys are figuring it out down there. He's working with two other people, so I want to give him a shout out before we start, and that is Will Correll and Matthew Meyer. All right, let's get to it. Let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Alex Steinmetz of Busky Cider in Richmond, Virginia. You guys are starting this whole project, and you are ready to start fermenting some cider. Is that true? Like, are you starting like this week, actually?
Last night, I pitched the yeast, and Busky got its first juice in on Tuesday, it was, and getting the glycol set up, and I added the yeast yesterday. So fermentations, and you know, the yeast are budding, and they're in a happy environment. So fermentation is going to be starting here, and we're all stoked about it. I mean, it's a long journey opening a startup, and Will's been on this pursuit for 3 years, and I've been brought aboard in the last few months, and it's a really neat thing that you got going there from just a ground level and seeing a business build. So the first juice are in the tanks, and fermentation is going to be on its way.
Wow. Okay, so let's kind of back up here a little bit and just give Ciderville a little bit of a context here, because you and I have been chatting back and forth via Twitter and email for a while now. So let's give everyone a bit of an overview of what's happening. It's yourself, and you said Will. And let's give Will a shout out and give his full name.
Yeah, Will Carell. And then Matthew Meyer is a winemaker out in Williamsburg, and he's a partner as well. So it's really the three of us building this brand.
And was this both Matthew and Will's kind of pipe dream, and they pulled together, and then you came on board?
Yeah, it really was. Will started it in about 3 years back and won entrepreneurship, some money, a grant, and kind of went on this journey. And Matthew came aboard, I think, I want to say maybe a year ago. And then in the last 2 months, at the end of December, I was brought on. So I was brewing back in Wisconsin and listening to your show even before I was in the cider industry, which is kind of neat to see that progression. But learning about cider, really intrigued by it, making mead and thinking, well, you know, I'm really, fermentation inspires me completely. And making cider was just, this opportunity came up, but starting on the ground level of building something, and that influence I wanted to have. And, so the opportunity came and I moved down to Richmond.
Wow. So they started this vision 3 years ago, and you really got my ears kind of perked up there. You mentioned a grant. Is that what really helped launch on the money side to getting this startup cidery going? Because it costs a lot of money from building it from the ground up, as you are.
Definitely. That did spark. It was, I believe it was $10,000. So it was a spark. And from there, you know, you can get, you can build a core around that. So finding investors may be easier. You've already, you know, influencer, people believe in you at that point, so you have that on your you know, in your back pocket. Okay, well, I was people believed in me. I got this grant, and now, you know, with a business plan and with just kind of drawing out of where you want to take it, it helped. But the investors, I mean, it takes a lot more than that, and especially a startup business, you know, construction of a building. Or you know, from anything, even merchandise, trying to get swag out and trying to get product before even you're generating any capital. So it is challenging, but that was the real spark of it. And it just kind of snowballed into investors and a bigger thing.
Do you know what the name of the grant was? Was that local for Virginia itself?
Yeah, it was out of, I believe, so Will went to Hampton, Sydney. I think it was either in, now I'm new to Virginia, so excuse me on some of this geographic talk, but it was either in Williamsburg or where Hampton, Sydney is. I think Farmville is the name. And so in that, yeah, it was Virginia solely, and he was taking a course at Hampton, Sydney, just sparked the Busky Cider.
Cool. And what is the background on the name Busky Cider?
It's a colonial name that Ben Franklin phrased. Is just going to be in comfortable in an environment, you know, approachable, sociable, fun to be around, a nice beverage, and that's our pursuit.
And this is a cidery that you're bringing juice in. It's not like an orchard-based cidery or farm cidery.
So we have 22 trees that we are going to experiment with and make some test and kind of play around with our own estate fruit. But the main bulk comes from Harrisonburg up in the mountains, kind of foothills of Shenandoah. We're sourcing our apples from Turkey Knob. So it's an orchard out in Harrisonburg as well. And they'll take shipments of their apples and the blends that we want and then to Andros. And they'll press them and they'll filter them to what we need. And they're hitting specs of pH. We really can hone in on that. See, our background is in fermentation, and Will's is in finance and economics. So he's doing the business side. We're doing fermentation, and that's what we specialize in. And with the pressing, they're really good at that. That's what they've been doing for hundreds of years. I think they're a century-old company. So they are professionals at that. So if we're asking for a certain blend, they provide it for us. So that it's a nice relationship we have with them. And so then they bring it into the tanker, and the tanker pulls back into the cidery. The garage doors come up, and Tuesday was the first go at it, and hoses into the fermenters and pump them in and pitch yeast and rock and roll.
Yeah. Now, what were some of the things that you guys had to kind of figure out on creating the cidery itself? Obviously, you want to have a good loading dock so that they could kind of bring that tanker. I'm imagining it's a like a tanker truck that they're bringing the juice in, or is it like it? That's the way it's being. It's kind of like a big tube that comes in. So, can you give Ciderville like an idea of how you plan that out? Because there's a lot of folks listening who are have that same dream that you and Will and Matt have. So what would be some of the kind of nuts and bolts to kind of setting up an urban cidery as you have?
That's the thrilling part of a startup. You know, you wear many hats being a part of a startup. You're trying to evolve and grow a business. Starting off, finding location is a bit. Let's step back even with a business plan, or you know, have the business plan, and from there you can always add to the business plan, but understand, you know, how much money would this cost? Kind of go out. I know Reverend Nat, I forget his name offhand, the cider maker out in Seattle or Portland it was. And he has a whole podcast, or he has a segment of PowerPoint, and it's audio too. And you listen to that, and the industry networking is a huge thing. You know, this industry is an open one, and similar to craft brewing, and I think craft beverages in general, it's a passion-driven thing that people are looking, you know, they're looking out for one another. So you can pick anyone's brains, you know, send emails, and from there just find what needs to happen. So finding a location, and then equipment, and then, you know, licensing. The timetables vary. Like the TTB, it took a while to get our licensing, and it's 9 months we were waiting for, and then you're just trying to fit in, you know, making sure your equipment, making sure you're ready to launch. And if you're having contractors come in and that sort of thing, and doing remodeling to a building, the timetable always seems to be pushing back and back. And that's just the nature of it, which, you know, it'd be nice to just get everything rolling and bam, bam, bam. But it really is a thing that you're piecing together. And the best advice would just be, do as much research as you can, honestly. I mean, even listen to Cider Chat here with professionals that are in the industry, or the internet is, you know, a wealth of knowledge.
Right. Now, you mentioned Reverend Nat, so you're talking about Nat West, and he has an actual PowerPoint that he sent to you, or you found it online?
Yeah, I found it online. Yeah, he just posted it to the public, and it breaks down of costs, and he started really organically and just kind of do it yourself way. So you're saving a lot of money on that end. And that was just on the internet. I think I might've found it on Google. You can dig into a lot of things. And another one, I want to give a plug to Eric West is his name.
Yes.
The Cider Guide.
Yes, that's right.
So in that, you know, there's information out there that we can utilize.
Now, Eric is based in Virginia, and I was wondering about Virginia itself as a state for new startups and cidery, because it's pretty happening down there. You have a cider trail. Did you get involved with the Virginia like Cider Guild, or how does that work? That, or maybe the better question is, were there any local like state organizations that you found really helpful?
Yeah, we are a part of the Virginia Cider Guild. I think there's maybe 10 to 15 cideries, but now there's some new ones popping up. And as I was looking down from Wisconsin and seeing what they're doing down here in Virginia with a lot of good apples, a lot of good cideries, that kind of launched me into moving this way too, because they're progressive in that way. And I mean, out west too, it's really well, but the Midwest, and like I was listening to Virtue Cider and Greg Hall, and there's some really good cideries across the country, but it seems like right here in Virginia, we got a nice group core that's all within. I mean, I drove up to the Andros and tasted our blend, and then went out to the orchard and stepped in at Old Hill Cidery, Shannon and Sarah of Trollwalter Farms, and that was a very organic experience, because they truly care about the product, and being a part of that culture and community in Virginia, I'm loving it. So they're growing apples, and they're making hard cider there as well.
Okay, Ciderville, let's catch up here a little bit with Alex, because he's mentioned some cool things, and I want to make sure that you get them all before we go into the next stage of this chat. You know, we were Skyping here, and that's one of the difficulties with Skype. It could kind of give that little reverb there. Yet another reason to support Cider Chat on Patreon, so we could get into a different system to hook up with cider makers. And some of the folks that he was talking about, one, we all know that it's the Virginia Association of Cider Makers. So that's a group down there that was helping him. He also mentioned Eric West. We have a link there on the show notes for Eric. He does a cider guide. He has a website. And that was a Hampton-Sydney College that had that program that they were able to get the $10,000 award from. He also mentioned Nat West of Reverend Nat's in Portland, Oregon. And I have a link on the show notes to that PowerPoint. And it's a startup commercial cider making with low capital input. So it's a really cool PowerPoint. You could check that out. I'm sure it would help you if this is a direction that you're going into. And then he also mentioned Old Hill Cider. It might have sounded like Old Pill Cider. At least at first it did to me. But it's Old Hill Cider, and that is also in Virginia, too. All right, now let's get back to this chat with Alex Steinmetz of Busky Cider in Richmond, Virginia. Now, one of the things I hear about Virginia, and of course, this is, you know, for all the U.S., is about the fruit. And of course, I've already spoken to Castle Hill, what they're doing with their Kevri, you know, where they bury the clay vessels in the ground. I know you're doing an urban cidery. You're sourcing the juice. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like you're having the cider actually blended beforehand. So you're not doing single variety apples that you're fermenting. You're doing the blending and fermenting that out. Is that correct?
Yeah, we have a blend that we're working with. We collaborated with Andros and did samples and ran lab work on them. And we're using five different varieties and fermenting them out with different yeast strains. And then we'll be tasting it. And it's the first go at this. So the first production batch, we're going to sample it each day, of course, take gravity readings, pH readings, and really develop the product right now. And that's what we're targeting is, well, we can blend back batches too with one another. We have 9 fermentation vessels. So that allows us to, blend, just go off of flavor. We're going to sit down and taste them and really go off of what our palate's telling us.
So let's start there on the actual cidery setup. In craft brewing, we'd say, well, it's a 50-barrel system or it's a 7-barrel system. What did you look at for your starting point here? Because what I often see with folks is they start at one point and they're like, oh, 3 months later, we already have to expand. So what did you earmark for this initial, you know, get going right now? You have 9 fermentation vessels. How big are those?
So we have 4 brewing tanks and 5 wine tanks. And the thing is, so 4 of them are conical. Shooting for 5,000 gallons is a tanker truck of juice that we can get shipped down to us. So that's kind of the max. And right now we have 4,200 gallons worth of fermentation vessels. So we will add a fermentation vessel or two in the next few months here. But really the bench point for their ordering the fermentation vessels is how much juice can we get down here and then pump them into the tanks and go from there. So 5,000 is 1 tanker truck. We're fermenting 4,200 right now. And in barrels wise, I think it's around 143 barrels. Cider has a unique thing because we're going to be canning and kegging. So very similar to brewing, and the fermentations are very similar to wine and nutrient additions and the yeast wise as well.
Well, that's a big commitment of 4,200 gallons of blended cider. Do you then separate those out and do 1 pitch of yeast for 1, like, you know, 1 fermentation vessel? Are you separating like that, or are you doing 1 primary cider that you're trying to make with all that initial juice?
The 2 30-barrel tanks, I pitch the same strain, and then the 4 15-barrels, they're all different strains amongst them. And then we got 3 4.2-barrel tanks. And those I'm going to hop with Citra, dry hop with Citra. They're going to be more specialty for the tap room. things, so we can offer it a small batch into the tap room. Right now, we're seeing what we can get from these yeast strains. We've been doing test batches for, we've pumped out myself 30 test batches since I've been down here. But Will has been on this process, and Matthew has been doing test batches, and we're collaborating on that end as well.
And what did you think about in terms of your public? Because you're going to have a tasting room, and you're going to have the cider on draft. So really oftentimes, you know, starting a new cidery, you're thinking, man, what the heck do people want to drink? Are they really used to a much sweeter cider or a drier? So what are you kind of going to try for that initial, I'm going to say, flagship cider that you're going to be putting out on tap in the beginning when you first start pouring that? What are you looking at?
Yeah, we're going to shoot for an off dry. The sweet ciders, we're going off our own palate. So I prefer a drier cider, and I'm finding it in a can. It's hard. I know Seattle Cider does it, and I truly like it. And, Jack's and Schilling, I've had some really good ones in the can, but I want to make a product that I enjoy, but I also think there's a purpose for that out in, you know, the community and for the consumers. I really think an off dry, flavor that you can have a few of, and it's not going to be too cloying to the mouth. Mm-hmm. Just something I can finish off, and you get this nice bright apple flavor, and something you can enjoy. That's really what it is, a nice carbonation level, and bringing it all together in a can.
So it's going to be on draft and in a can?
We'll be canning. We're working with Old Dominion canning line.
And how about in any kind of like growlers or, the smaller version of the growler, the little crawlers? Are you putting
it? The howler?
Yeah, well, a couple different names for it. I mean, do you have different packaging that you're going to be doing there?
Yes, cans and kegs. Cans will come at the end of the year. We're getting the kegs out to distribution in Richmond. And then we will have 32-ounce howlers or half growlers in the tasting room. And we're still deciding if we want to do the growler thing. We have a nice relationship kitty corner to us right in the Scott's Edition neighborhood that's growlers to go. So you go in there and they have about 40 beers on and you can get growlers there. So we really want to support them as well. So I think we're going to push their, that service there, because it, they're doing a great job over there. And if we can have our cider on tap there, they can get growlers there. It's just a short walk, and maybe howlers by us, but we're going to be serving pints.
Yeah.
And little samplers as well. Yeah.
And what about the tasting room? Is that what are you earmarking to have that open for?
Open to the community, third week of April. That's what we're shooting for. But our focus right now is getting the first batch through, rolling it through April 20th, tentatively. That's what we're shooting for.
Okay, and you and I are speaking on St. Patrick's Day in March, just to give Ciderville an idea of where we're at. So you got that equipment in. I think it was sometime in like February when you finally got your equipment delivered, set it up. You just got your juice pitched yesterday, so that's March 16th, and then you're going to be looking at having the cider, the first tasting with at least the public, or that soft opening, we'd say, about a month later. Is that about right, the schedule that you've been doing?
Yep, that's exactly right. We'll do primary fermentation, and we'll let the fermentation go around. See, again, we're going to be tasting it along the way, so we're shooting for fermentation very similar to, primary similar to wine and beer. They ferment really nice. These sugars are, the yeast are happy with them, and they'll ferment them quick. So we'll filter into the bright tank, and with a plate filter, and then we'll carb it up and taste it, and if we're at blending or what we have to do on that end, and then we'll filter it again through a cartridge filter and then package in form. So we're shooting for 20 to 24 day production time.
Why did you decide to go with filtering? Because not all cideries do that. I'm just kind of curious what the logic was. You have a brewer, you have a winemaker coming together on this. Why the decision to filter?
We're filtering because, we want to keep this really shelf stable, and that's that's the main thing we're looking for. And if it's developing in the can more with the yeast or re-fermentation and, you know, sulfite and stuff like that can be done. But we just wanted this to be a product that's consistent as can be. We're trying to go in this, you know, that you order this Busky brand, this Busky cider, the flagship as it were, and you know what to expect. And that's what a lot of great craft breweries do, and that's what a lot of great wineries do. I mean, consistency is huge, and we just found that filtering, I think we'll cover our bases in that.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
and again, I mean, I like, you know, unfiltered beers. I like filtered beers. It's nice to the eye, I believe. I mean, filtration, Charlie Bamforth, I've listened to, read many of his papers, great brewing knowledge out at UC Davis, and talks about filtration a little bit and kind of makes, you know, a romantic description of beer and just saying, you know, he's speaking of a Pilsner and saying, you know, how clear it is and just keeping that in mind. And I really do think a filtered beverage, now it depends on what you're shooting for, but, you know, a nice filtered cider is, to the eyes, what I think we're going to achieve. And that's what we were shooting for.
Right. And just to, again, let the folks out in Ciderville know what both Alex and I are hoping for, is to kind of be checking in down the line and kind of have an ongoing story with Busky Cider. So that I'm going to make a little projection here, buddy. I'm just going to guess that I imagine, you know, when we talk again, maybe, you know, 8 months from now or whatever, that you might be saying, you know, Rio, now we got some barrels. Now we're, you know, having some ciders where we are filtering, we're not filtering. And the likelihood of that kind of opening, certainly also as the local palate of the folks coming in kind of changed too, I'm guessing that's going to change. And is that something that you've had a discussion for, or some of your like goals down the line?
Totally. Yeah. If you can bet on that, because Matthew comes from working with many barrels at the winery. We want to get into that and down the line even have the potential of these bomber bottles or 750s that are more specialty barrel age. And I mean, adding some complexity to things too. So we're talking the flagship and we're going to push that and, you know, produce a real consistent product. But that's the fun part of making with different yeast strains and working with barrels. And at the beginning of this all, Will's first name for Busky Cider Company was Busky Barrel. And that was a thing. I mean, so kind of from the start, it kind of encompasses that. And we're definitely, we'll play around with those sort of things. And even if it's the staves of the barrels or if it's, we're going to be experimenting too. There's going to be a line for that.
Right. Well, I think this is important to kind of to note for folks thinking about doing what you guys have kind of created right now, is that initially, certainly with an urban cidery, I mean, Richmond is a very large city, that sometimes you have to take this initial approach and get your all systems go and get that local attention and kind of like branding yourself and getting folks on board. And then from there, kind of upping, you know, the production or expanding into different venues. But in an urban cidery, I'm not sure if you have much of a choice. It's not like it hasn't been done, but this is just one of the models that seems to work for a lot of folks.
Yeah, and Blue Bee, they started about, I think, 4 years back here in Richmond, the first urban cidery, you could call it. And they're coming into Scott's Edition, our neighborhood, and we're going to be neighbors with them a few blocks away. And the urban cidery approach is different. It's, you're not working directly with the farm and you're doing a lot of things that, and Blue Bee does work a lot with their orchards, and as do we. I mean, we're scheming up with Turkey Knob and Andros, and then even with, we have an orchardist that takes care of the trees on our plot. So it's definitely a different business model, and forming, that's thing that we're looking forward to, is being in a neighborhood that's well trampled. We'll be getting, you know, foot traffic and people will be, you know, trying it, and then you build the brand up, and you, Richmond is really welcoming, and I've had such a good experience thus far moving down from the Midwest, and Virginia as a whole is just a really beautiful part of the country. So I think back to the point of urban cider is drawing in people, building this up, and we're going to go off of the consumer's palate as well. You know, ours is for taste points, and like I was mentioning, trying to nail a product, but we're going to push out some styles and see what the consumer's like and see what our customer base appreciates or is asking for, and I'm going to adapt to that.
So how about some other tips that you might have for listeners thinking, dang, you know, I want to do this in my own little city? Is there any advice that you'd have? You mentioned about, you know, networking, definitely, and doing a lot of research, no doubt about that. Anything that kind of came up that you said, ah, I didn't really think about this, but now I have to deal with it?
Well, yeah, a lot of the things are just licensing and getting permits and, you know, making sure you got all the equipment you need, because, you know, we're putting in a keg washer that we bought and the air compressor, now we got to go out and source that. And there's just certain, you're always going to be adding different pieces. So the more you know of how the production side works, how the business side works, the more you learn, I'm a true believer in networking, because you could, a few conversations, I mean, even listening to the conversations you've had in the past with these cider makers and enthusiasts, and, you know, you pick up, you just got to really be dedicated to this thing. You got to have, you know, drive, because pulling all nighters and, you know, cleaning tanks and, you know, hard work, it'll pay off, but you're going to have to do it. You're going to have to grind out and do it. And if you grind and learn as much as, you know, information as you can, be dedicated to it.
Well, that's a good question. How long are your work days coming up to this pitch that you did yesterday with the apple juice?
They've been some long, long weeks moving down here, and I had some friends visiting and trying to be able to accommodate to them. But we're talking, you know, 60-hour week up to 80-hour weeks, and Will's putting in a ton of time there. And the glycol is getting put in simultaneously as we're getting juice. So it's we're just going with it. It's an exciting time because, you know, you're pushing yourself. I worked throughout the whole evening Monday night and cleaning the tanks up until 5 a.m. And still, you're on adrenaline, really, because this badge, there's a lot riding on it. Not only, I mean, the community has been hearing about it for a while. You got people caring about the product. You got to put something that's good and tasteful out there. So keeping that all in mind, and that kind of what can keep you going through a day and making sure, you know, really believing in it, though. I think that's the main thing. If you believe and you really like to do, like, I feel natural in the production. When I ordering and doing that, the yeast thing, and trying to, you know, find the products you need, that's necessary. But when you're in the production and you're cleaning the tanks and in that environment, that's what I enjoy to do. That's what I feel my calling is. So on the long days, it's not an issue, and it's fun.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it in your voice, and I've heard it ever since we've kind of gotten connected together. I'm wondering, Alex, is there, you know, looking back, I want to back up here. I do think this is important to note for folks thinking about getting into a cidery, that it is a lot of work and that excitement drives you, and yet you have to realize this is a big commitment. So if you have relationships, be it family or friends, it's going to really take a bit of compromising at both ends, and people should kind of know going in what's involved so they don't get too overwhelmed, which leads me to my next question is, looking back in this time span, you know, you've moved from Wisconsin down to Virginia, you've gotten together on this, you know, pretty amazing startup going forward. Is there anything right now, and I'm going to ask this again when we chat down the line, but that if you were starting over, that you might do a little bit differently?
Will definitely would say filing the permits and just making sure you're good with compliance on that end. It seems to be, you know, the more research you do, that's just the way it goes when you're trying to start up in the alcohol industry. You're working with the TDP, the federal government. You got to make sure you got your, you know, everything lined up on that front. Labeling, approvals, that all takes time. Can approvals. Just make sure you plot out some time that, because you know, you want to put a launch date down. You want to get the community happy, you know, excited, and you know, waiting for your product. But really say, well, this is how long this is going to take. Tap handles. I was talking to a distributor yesterday, and she was saying 16 weeks to get tap handles, the timetable, and just make sure you have getting all that lined up, licensing scheme. I mean, that pushes companies back months. So that's the main thing. Other than that, from a product standpoint, you know, you can get caught up to speed and just learn as much as you possibly can, really.
Well, I think that's it in a nutshell. And it's always kind of the woes of dealing, you know, with the licensing permit to come in. I've seen many folks just kind of almost standing at the tasting room bar and just tapping their fingers, waiting for that moment when they could they have a pouring permit. Let's just say, touch on one more piece here, which is a tasting room. So if folks were going to come and visit Bousky Cider, what can they expect in the tasting room?
We're going to give tours along the way, but you walk right through the door and we got windows that looks out into the production or the fermentation farm, as it were. So they'll come down, have a pint. We got a bar and capacity of 150 occupancy. So there's some space to move around, and the apple trees are growing up front. So in the front there, so you're watching the trees look out the window and you see our apple trees growing. So we hope to have it, you know, a welcoming, unique experience that people can just feel comfortable at and enjoy good cider.
Nice. Is there parking is it easy to park out front?
There's a parking lot about a block, or half a block away that we can, that parking will be available for Bousky customers. But the Scott's Addition area in Richmond, you can walk there very easily. There's a lot of young professionals and the population that are, you know, apartment complexes coming up. And we got about 20 different, by the end of this year, we'll have 20 different craft alcohol producers in the Scott's Addition area. And that's, we're talking, you know, maybe a radius of 10 miles of this neighborhood of just popping up with these good breweries that you can kind of hit. And that's what Virginia, you stated, kind of like the trail and the cider trail. Well, the craft trail, even in Richmond, Stone Brewing came to town, and that sparks a lot of interest. And these smaller ones opening up, doing really, really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds fun. When you say Scott's Addition, I'm not sure what that means. Is that like a new complex? What do you mean by Scott's Addition?
Actually, a historic district of Richmond. So it's districts Richmond is, and you got the Fan, and you got a museum district, and Churchill, and Shaco Bottom type thing. And we're more on from downtown. We're on west. We're west of downtown. So it's just, I guess, being a Richmonder, you'd have to, like, 2 months into it, I guess I'm calling myself a Richmonder already. But that's kind of what the neighborhood scene is here, the district. It's just a part of Richmond, a little outside of downtown, near maybe 2 miles away from VCU.
Okay, great. Perfect. That gives folks a little bit of idea as they're kind of coming in and saying, dang, I want to get Bousky's. And, you know, can they even park up front? Is there street parking up front?
There sure is. So, yeah, you can park along the road there, and there's street parking. And like I said, that parking lot just a half block away. So you can pull right up to it and stroll on in and enjoy some Bousky cider.
Perfect. Alex, I really want to thank you for, like, letting us have a little bit of insight on the startup of a new cidery in an urban setting like Richmond, Virginia. And I look forward to staying in touch with you and meeting down the line, looking back at this period and giving a little bit more tips to Ciderville on how to start an urban cidery.
Yeah, I get too excited about this stuff.
That's a good thing to be, though. Don't ever lose your excitement. The little bit that I do know of Alex, he is not going to lose his zest for life nor cider making. It's going to be really interesting to see how things go. And it's a little scary in a way, and yet you could feel his excitement. I mean, imagine having 4,200 gallons of cider and you're pitching it and kind of saying, okay, well, here we go. That's a big commitment. And over the course of my career, you know, I have talked to breweries and different craft makers of different libations, and when things go really well, and then sometimes it's like, oh crap, you know, it's not going right. But he sounds like he's got it under control, and they've thought it through, really coming in together with a team. And that's a nice way to go. I mean, folks go it alone, and when you have partners, that's a nice way to do it too, because you could kind of lean on each other and keep on moving forward. So bon voyage to Busky Cider. I can't wait to kind of watch on Twitter and Facebook and see how the opening goes in April. Exciting times. And exciting times, as always, throughout the world in Ciderville. And next week, I have a couple choices for podcast episodes, so I'm trying to round that up, kind of like getting fillies into a little corral, wondering which one kind of meets all our needs. So you'll have to stay tuned on that and just wait and see. In the meanwhile, if you want to send out a hey, please do at Cider Chat on Twitter. It's always really great to hear what you're thinking about on the podcast. And while you're online, how about leaving a review and rating? It's been a while for iTunes, and it'd be really great to get that out there, because it kind of perks iTunes a logarithm up, and they say, oh, well, okay, that podcast, we won't like push it down into the dark archives. And speaking of archives, you know, we have a pretty good archive list here now in Cider Chat. We're on episode 23, and there is some amazing information if you just scroll through. The first full chat was with Field Maloney of West County Cider, and that is a real keeper. That's really nice. I was able to speak to Judith Maloney recently, and, you know, just salt of the earth people. Then there's also Robert Coles building a cider house. He has a great story. If you kind of hear him do his old, like, New England call, that's just worth the podcast listen in and of itself. Then those dudes from the Northwest, Nick Gunn of Wandering Angus and Dave White from Whitewood Cider, they had an interesting chat about Northwest versus East Coast cider and what was going on there. Then I had a little, well, kind of like a little silly thing, was part of a promotional called Thanks Podcasting, where I spoke to President John Adams. You know, he was one of the founding founders, and I just channeled him. You know, it happens. Too much fun. And then there's Paul Zacco. He won cider making for 12 times in a row. I mean, 12 years in a row, this guy won Cider Maker of the Year. And he had some cool tips on cider making for both the hobbyist and certainly for commercial cider makers. Then there was David Cords from Sonoma Cider, talking about his California-based cidery. And then the gang from La Verge de la Colline, and this is a Quebec, Canada cidery. And that's 8 episodes. I mean, that's 8 hours of podcast listening right there. So if you're new to Cider Chat, you got a little bit of catching up. And I really think that each of those podcast chats are really chock full of cider info that you don't want to miss out on. So it's a good thing to kind of just download that. You could get Cider Chat via iTunes, and now we are on TuneIn Radio, and that's another stream. So the podcast goes out everywhere, and of course you could always go to ciderchat.com and download it there to listen to as you're cruising around. Well, I'm going to be rolling out of here, but I first want to make sure that we thank our founding sponsor for this Cider Chat, and that is Cider Cellars LLC. Remember, that's cellars as in the place that you keep your barrels. These folks, they are U.S.-based, and they are a brand new importer where they're introducing Americans to traditional craft ciders from Britain. Really nice people. They could certainly help you get those delicious U.K. ciders to your pub, your cidery, your restaurant, and those stores that carry the best craft libations. These are ciders where they are using traditional bittersweet and bitter sharp cider apples with no artificial ingredients. I am getting so thirsty. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, that's it. Thank you so much, Cider Cellars, for sponsoring this podcast. And thank you for listening. This is Rio Wind Color, signing off for now. I look forward to seeing you in Ciderville.